Thank you, Greta Gathier. I have been on the NextGen board now for... Senator Sparks, how long have I been on that?
Nine.
It's been a long time, and it's a wonderful board. And I believe it's been 4 years, right? And there are some really great projects that are coming out of that board. Mm-hmm. Just in the Ag Committee, just at 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. extended the funding for some of those projects. I did testify that I wished there was some more money to fund those projects, but at least it is going. And what I like about it is the utilizing all the resources that we have in the state. And the NextGen does a very good job at moving these projects forward, whittling out some of the bad ones, some of the good ones. It's a good process, so hopefully Ms. Gauthier and Ms. Conley from the staff at the Department of Ag, and Ms. Gauthier is the government relations director, you guys can give us a good overview. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're happy to be here, and thank you for having us here today to talk about the NextGen Biofuels Board, what they have been working on, and what the future is looking like. My name, for the record, is Greta Gauthier. I'm the government relations director from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I have with me here Christina Connolly, who is our NextGen Biofuels Manager, and we have a short PowerPoint presentation, and then we would be happy to answer any questions you may have. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Ms. Connolly, who will take us through the PowerPoint, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. Connolly, please introduce yourself for the tape and go ahead with your presentation.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and members. For the record, my name is Christina Connolly. I'm the Biofuels Manager for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And as Greta mentioned, today's focus is the NextGen Energy Board, and I think all of you have in front of you the board's most recent report to the legislature. But before we get into the board specifically, I want to provide a little bit of a backdrop about the biofuels industry in Minnesota. You can see on the map here on the left, and you also have this in front of you, the layout of the biofuels plants in Minnesota. We have 21 ethanol plants and 4 biodiesel plants with a combined capacity of more than 1 billion gallons of renewable fuels annually. This industry has really provided significant economic benefit to the state, and I'll get into that in more detail in a moment. We also are unique, really, in having a lot of farmer ownership in our plants. About half of them are farmer-owned co-ops. This is something we're proud of in Minnesota. And a number of our plants are, the existing corn, ethanol, soy diesel, traditional plants are involved in a lot of innovative next-gen type of operations and technology utilization. For example, the Chippewa Valley Ethanol Company in Benson, Minnesota, they are currently working on a number of different initiatives to replace ultimately up to more than 90% of their natural gas use that goes into their ethanol production by gasifying wood chips and other ag residues like corn cobs, corn stover, and then ultimately transitioning to cellulosic ethanol. That gasification piece is a key component of the whole process. We also have a plant in Winnebago, Corn Plus, that has received a number of awards for energy efficiency initiatives. They're working on reducing water consumption and natural gas consumption. In addition, we are a leader in E85, both in policy and infrastructure. We have the most E85 stations in the nation. According to the American Lung Association in Minnesota, that's the group that really tracks this the most, we have about 355 E85 stations today, with 11 more planned for 2011. 69 of those are blender pumps as well, so not only can you get E85, but you can get, say, E20, E30, E50, the retailer can choose, but those are some of the more common blends. And then we have approximately 225,000 flex fuel vehicles on the road that can utilize those pumps. And then finally, we're really a longtime national leader in policy and development for biofuels. In the 1980s, we kick-started the industry with an ethanol producer payment program, and then we shortly thereafter became one of the first, or the first state, I'm sorry, to mandate ethanol in Minnesota and later biodiesel. We currently blend 10% ethanol and 5% biodiesel into our fuel supply, and on the books is increasing amounts over the coming years. And then what we'll talk about more today is advanced ethanol policy. But as promised, I first wanted to highlight the economic impact of our biofuels industry in Minnesota. really without the investments that we've put into this industry today, we wouldn't be where we are now and where we're looking to the future. Our Department of Agriculture economists estimated in 2010 that at our current capacity for ethanol, we generated more than $3 billion in economic activity and more than 84,000 jobs, or 8,400 jobs. 84,000 would be amazing. And our soy diesel industry, too, is not pictured here, but is also an important factor in our economy. It's much smaller, but our economists estimated that based on numbers pretty similar to what we're at today capacity-wise for soy diesel, we're generating about $920 million in economic activity and 5,600 jobs. So really, this has been an important part of our economic development in Minnesota. And now to move on to the board, the reason I wanted to provide that backdrop is this board really grew out of Minnesota's rich history and leadership in biofuels and other energy policies. The board came from something called the Next Gen Energy Initiative, which was initiated in 2007, and that initiative included a broad range of energy goals, so things like community-based energy development, renewable electricity standards, things like that, or requirements, I should say, but also a focus on next-generation bioenergy and biofuels. And to fulfill that portion of the Next Gen Energy Initiative, the Next Gen Energy Board was established also in 2007 by the previous administration and the Minnesota Legislature. I should mention, too, that this type of work is also a priority of Governor Dayton. He wants to move Minnesota into an advanced energy economy and to build on the existing structures that we have here. So as you can see on this slide, by law, the board is charged with researching and reporting to the legislature how Minnesota can be most effective in achieving those bolded items: energy independence, agricultural and natural resource sustainability, and rural economic vitality. And a primary duty of the board, listed number one there, is to examine the future of biofuels. And this includes ethanol and biodiesel, but also other fuels like biobutanol, methanol, and other advanced options. And then really a more general purpose of the board, although not stated in legislation, has kind of the spirit behind it. It has been to build consensus among a variety of state leaders in the energy world around the idea of moving Minnesota into the next generation of advanced bioenergy. So the board is comprised of 20 members. The members include legislators, state commissioners, and stakeholders in the ag and energy organizations, in the academics and industry, things like that. 8 are appointed by the governor. Listed on the right-hand side are the existing 2010 board membership organizations that are represented. Because of the change in leadership, much of this will change. In statute, the commissioners are automatic, so the agencies represented are listed there: Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Commerce, and DEED, and then members of the House and Senate. But then the organizations listed here and the members of those organizations currently can change.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, just to add that amongst the legislators, that from each House, it is the chair of the energy-related committee, the chair of the Ag Committee. Yep. So, and then I believe...
And then the other members from the legislature are the minority member from those committees are appointed by the entire committee.
Junior.
The board typically meets maybe every other month outside of the legislative session. We try to avoid the legislative session since so many on the board are involved. And as of now, the board as a general entity is set to expire in June of 2014. One of the board's first major activities, which is what, Madam Chair, you mentioned earlier, was to award next-gen energy grants through the Next-Gen Energy Grant Program. In 2008, the board provided about $3 million in grant dollars to 8 advanced energy projects in Minnesota. I won't go into great detail on each of them because you can read about them on pages 9 through 12 of the report, but they really represent a diverse array of companies, of projects across Minnesota. I'll highlight 2 particularly successful examples to date. The Central Lakes College Ag Center in Staples, they were awarded $100,000 to study the production feasibility and energy content of 5 perennial energy crops. And for anyone who's really interested in that, it's switchgrass, intermediate wheatgrass, survivor false indigo, prairie coregrass, and cold strain miscanthus. The project is a partnership with the Minsku campus, local farmers, and University of Minnesota faculty. They also are planning to look at best management practices for growing and harvesting those crops for use as a cellulosic ethanol feedstock. I recently had some email communication with the project manager who described this grant as a very valuable watershed event for the college and the surrounding area. They've been able to collect a lot of data on these species. They're gaining a lot of knowledge on best management practices. And more exciting is that he consistently has said this project has accomplished much more than planned. Early on in the project, they added to the species camelina oilseed as another crop and some related biodiesel production activities. And they feel that this has generated a lot of interest at the college, so they're thinking about some programs around it. More interest in the community, some local biodiesel producers, and they're really feeling like this could be an economic benefit for that part of Minnesota. And so far, the other kind of standout crop has been miscanthus. It's proven to be very hardy in the winter and is out yielding its competitors, as they say. And then finally, the project has plans to continue even after its grant contract is ended. They're going to have a contract with the University of Illinois to continue studying the cold strain miscanthus, and they have been invited to be a part of a DOE grant that will look into more of these camelina biodiesel activities. And another successful example has been the University of Minnesota Forestry Department that was given $100,000 to study the sustainability of the state's woody biomass supply and looking at the physical, social, and economic availability of woody biomass, looking at landowner preferences, things like that. And they delivered their report in, I think, October, and it's available on their website, and I can also help you get a copy if you're interested. In addition to monitoring and awarding those grants, the board is engaged in other activities. They, in 2008 and 2009, met approximately 4 times each year. And like I said, the purpose of the board also is to keep those members involved up to date on what's going on. And so meeting topics have included and presentations from different individuals on, say, federal farm bill programs and how they can impact Minnesota. The board has heard from the Ag Utilization Research Institute on their initiatives and efforts, the University of Minnesota's IRE. And then the board goes on tours as much as they can, really, to get a hands-on experience with some of these projects. So they have visited the Minnesota Soybean Processors Facility in Brewster, University of Morris Gasifier, the Central Valley Ethanol Company in Benson, and things like that. In 2010, though, some of these same types of things happened, but the board also chose to really focus on updating its vision and strategy. It felt that things had really changed since the board was implemented in 2007 and really got going in 2008. Not only did the economy, of course, rapidly change right in that time frame, but really the biofuels industry has developed a lot, and the world as a whole has begun to focus on it quite a bit more. And so the board wanted to make sure that its objectives really matched with those changes. So at least the second half of the year or so was spent on looking at what could be done to update what its focus would be. And you can read about the objectives and the new vision on pages 6 and 7, and I'll talk about it in a moment as well. But just quickly to highlight kind of outcomes to date with the board, of course, the grant program. Also, the board reports annually to the legislature. You have the most recent report in front of you, and it includes updates on projects, but also other things that the board thinks can be happening in Minnesota, recommendations for the legislature, and action on those legislation pieces to date, or recommendations to date. The board also expanded its coverage fairly early on to include someone from the forest products industry. A member wasn't on the board initially, but was felt that that was an important aspect as well. And then the board works to support policies and things that are relevant to its charge. So, for instance, the biodiesel mandate that increased since the board started from 2% to 5%, that was an effort that they supported. And you can look back at old reports and see all of these recommendations and action items. So to touch on the new vision and strategy, if you will, the vision is now stated as supporting policies for the production and use of bioenergy and biofuels in Minnesota. And that's not too different from what it's always been, but the board decided it really wanted to hone in on three specific strategies to get there, which is to support and sustain the current industry and use it to build and support the next industry, industry of biofuels, to continue relying on and growing our homegrown renewable fuels to replace fossil fuels, and then to maintain and increase those rural economic benefits that the biofuels industry provides. To get to those objectives and strategies that the board has laid out, there are certainly some challenges, but I think with all of those challenges, opportunities. Of course, the biggest one is funding, no surprise to anyone, but really the opportunity is through this fund called the Agri Fund, which, Madam Chair, you mentioned in the beginning as we started here. In 2009, the legislature established the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Program, or AGRI, to promote the state's ag and renewable energy industries. And that fund in legislation provides the Commissioner of Agriculture with the authority to issue grants that support existing initiatives, and NextGen is stated in the legislation as one of those potential uses. And then another challenge is just the changes in leadership, but also a huge opportunity for ongoing and strengthened collaboration. To date, the board has been very cohesive, very unique in what it does and the type of people and organizations that it represents, and I think that can easily continue. So we're almost finished here, just a couple more slides, but in addition to the grant program, the board has identified some potential future deliverables that it can also work on. And if you want to read more about them in detail, you can start looking on page 7, but there are really four main ideas. The first is to coordinate efforts and programs in support of bioenergy development. So that can include some things like looking at existing state and federal programs and initiatives and where are there synergies or where is there duplication, where can we find partnership and collaboration, where are there opportunities for efficiencies. Another idea is to look at other states and do they have model or benchmark programs that could be used in Minnesota or replicated here. And finally, Minnesota is known to be sort of a leader in entrepreneurial spirit. How can we continue to harness that and state agency resources moving forward? Some of that is already being done. There are a lot of great programs through DEED to bring in new businesses, but how can we continue to expand those efforts? Second potential deliverable is to leverage federal programs that support the board's strategic vision. So things like the Federal Farm Bill, how can that be better leveraged in Minnesota? The Renewable Fuel Standard, I mean, really things like the Next Gen Energy Board come out of the fact that at the national level there's quite a large requirement to produce and use renewable fuels that grows and grows over the next decade. How can we leverage that in Minnesota? Third is improving public awareness and perception of biofuels through better and more current information. I mean, it's no surprise, I think, that there have been a lot of good and bad things said about biofuels in the recent years, the food and fuel issue, land use. How can those issues be addressed with updated information? And so the board has suggested maybe looking into having agencies look into where are there gaps in the research and how can we fill those gaps and ultimately disseminate accurate, updated information. And then finally, to engage in efforts to overcome regulatory barriers in bioenergy development. And this is really about the permitting process, which is already being addressed. But in addition to any legislation and the governor's executive order, ensuring state agency coordination in the permitting process and ensuring that state agencies are active in letting companies know what is involved so they're not surprised when they find that it takes time and money. And then, of course, the board can support legislative action to improve
that process. Give some to Andy, she's leaving.
And with that, Madam Chair, I've completed my comments, but we'd be happy to take any questions that the committee would have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Connolly. Ms. Gauthier. I do have... Senator Metzen.
I should, Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. Connolly. On the $3 million grants, are these innovative startup grants to get these things started? And if they're started already, are they self-sustaining? I mean, that would be the idea, but I would guess to give them the seed money up front to get them going. I want to help me understand this. And then And once they're going, are some of these got a history to them? And are they on their own? Are they making money? And are they employing people?
Okay.
And Senator Metzen, to that, if I could add to your question, because I think it's a very good question, because I'm sitting here thinking about the Renewable Development Fund and how you had the mission statement for electric energy production. And here the next gen, and obviously with the OLA report, there has been some issues with some of the funding. And here the board's purpose is to explore policies and opportunities for the state to most efficiently achieve energy independence, agricultural and natural resources sustainability, and rural economic vitality. So with that, Ms. Conley, or Ms. Gathier.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzen, great question, and I'd say the answer is it varies. Most of the projects are already existing companies. So, for example, the Minnesota Valley Alfalfa Producers, MINVAP, they've been around a while. I couldn't tell you how long, but they're a longstanding farmer co-op, and their project was to look at pelletization of specific types of ag residues. So that's not their day-to-day charge, but this is something that would help their company, their industry. Both of the colleges, of course, or I should say the two university projects.
They're not startups.
They're not startups, no.
Senator Metzen.
Yes, unique, Madam Chair and Senator Metzen. And I would say, you ask, too, are they ongoing? I'd say in many cases, they don't plan to stop when the grant is finished. You know, it helped them get started with a project, but they are partnering with someone else in the future. Or actually in two cases, the funding was providing money for phase two of something already funded by another grant.
Ms. Gauthier?
Madam Chair, just to add to that, Madam Chair and Senator Metzen, some of them are existing but doing innovative things, and we're supporting that. But in the case of at least one, the Central Lakes College in Wadena and Staples, they have two campuses. They actually added another component to the grant that was funded through NextGen, which was camelina oil seed. And as a matter of fact, United States military is looking at that as a source of jet fuel, and they are looking at trying it in North Dakota. So it really is great because when the grant was given, we didn't know that, but yet this is positioning Minnesota, to be in a good place when and if that happens. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Cooper.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Adding to that just a little bit, the MINVAP plant in Raymond got some startup funding for their pelletizing project, but now they're selling those pelletized products to the school in Murdoch. So they've developed a little bit of a client base that will no doubt keep them going as they progress down the road.
Yep. Ms. Conley, or Ms. Gauthier, can you explain just a little bit what you foresee in the biofuels industry? As you just a little bit stated that there are some issues, especially with probably the animal production aside, the cost of corn, and you can even expand this question to cellulosic ethanol, where we're going, and how do you see the biofuels industry in 5-10 years from now in the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, I don't see it going away, certainly. I think
that's good.
It's very easy growth, Madam Chair.
And I think that what we've built here is unique and has always been on the cutting edge, and really that's what this board has been all about, is how do we keep that cutting edge position in the nation. We have efforts looking at cellulosic ethanol. One of the next gen grantees, the Central Minnesota Minnesota Cellulosic Ethanol Partnership, it's partnered with the Central Minnesota Ethanol Co-op, which is an existing ethanol plant in Little Falls, and their whole project is centered on looking at the feasibility of transitioning to be the first cellulosic plant in Minnesota. And then, as I mentioned, CVAC is engaged in gasification efforts that they hope will ultimately bridge that gap as well. And so I think many of our plants are trying to find ways to be innovative. I think the economy and, you know, world turmoil in general is certainly making everybody question every policy action out there, and I think that's fair. But just today we had some articles exchanged about the food and fuel issue and rising price of commodities and for livestock, and also a fair thing to bring up. But really what they've found in many cases is that speculation in the commodities markets has really driven that, and ethanol hasn't been a part of the, you know, the main part of the problem. So I think as more information is developed and time goes on, those things continue to be addressed in a way that's favorable for the biofuels industry.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, I guess you're talking about a couple projects in my district, so I'm feeling compelled to add a comment. You know, at CVAC, I think because of the low price of natural gas in the marketplace, that project hasn't taken off as well as they hoped it would. I mean, it's economically viable to purchase it on the market at the moment. But they are set up, and I think they'll do a good job of producing a synthetic gas to cover that market should that price go back where it was not too long ago.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, if I may, in an era like this where commodity prices are affected by the weather in central Russia or a nuclear accident in Japan, where I understand quite a bit of their upcoming grain crop has been wiped out. Granted, they buy most of their food, but still, it's a bigger picture these days. But on the whole, I think the more options that we have as a state, the better off we are.
Well, Ms. Gauthier or Ms. Conley, why do you feel that Minnesota is competitive with this the biofuels industry compared to our surrounding states? It seems like much of the expansion, we haven't had an ethanol plant expansion in 3-5 years, Senator Magnus. It's been a while, and I know like the cellulosic plant in Emmitsburg, Iowa, chose Iowa because of permitting and some of the regulations. They've received close to $100 million on federal funding for that plant, and so we seem to be a little stagnant on our biofuels movement going forward. That's one of my questions, and the other question is, do you feel like the industry is sharing information, whether it's zero discharge or some type of using a different type of heating fuel, whatever? In the past, it seemed like the industry was very in very much silos and very very much into their own little technology, and they wouldn't share. And that's what I see with the Next Gen board is sharing the information. Everybody come to the table. This is what we have. Do you see that going forward? And do you see the biofuels industry continuing? Because we haven't seen much in the last few years. And I know the economy. I know everything there. But I hate competing with Iowa. Drives me crazy.
Well, Madam Chair, to answer your first question, which is, Iowa, are we stagnant, things like that, I would first say this is a great reason to continue funding the Next Gen board because, that would provide a source of funding. I do get questions, why don't we have a program for providing funding for risky biofuels projects? I'd also say that something people don't talk about enough but that I think is pretty enticing is that our corn prices in Minnesota have typically been lower. And so really that's kind of an indirect source of revenue, cost reduction, whatever you might want to call it, for a project looking to locate here. Maybe we don't offer the $1 million that a neighboring state would, but we can offer those lower prices, which could come out to be just as significant. In terms of sharing info, I guess I can just say that anecdotally, I feel that when I'm out, visiting a plant or with a larger group where multiple managers are involved, they're friendly with each other. They seem to know each other. They seem to have just been at meetings together. There isn't one unified coalition here in Minnesota, but there's sometimes talk of it. There have been coalitions in the past. I do think the industry as a whole wants that to happen. I mean, you even hear about it at the national level. Just today I saw something about, you know, RFA and growth and the corn growers wanting to come forward with a unified policy front on certain issues. I think they know it's an issue and that they need to come together to continue growing and things like that. So I do think there's an effort there.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Connolly or Ms. Guffier. I'm kind of stymied when people are still talking about corn ethanol. You know, I'm sorry, you know, biochemistry background, corn ethanol still isn't the smartest way to go. It just takes way too much energy to convert a starch to a sugar and then convert the sugar to a ethanol. So, you know, maybe if we were innovating, we'd be thinking about apples or sugar beets or any kind of sugary fruit to maybe. So that might be our innovation here. But that wasn't where I was going to go. But when I hear, you know, corn, I always go backwards and go, that's, you know, we got to move past that. And I don't mind keeping the existing plants moving corn. We will come up with new ways to make that more efficient all the time. But we got to move past that. And when I hear energy independence, you know, I think back to the federal energy department, let's see, back in the 70s, you know, and almost 40 years later, we're actually worse off than we were before. So we need to move past that. But I'm thinking in terms of biofuels, we have 69 blender pumps, and all the research I've read on blender pumps, I do that reading, members, and you get better mileage depending on the model and the size of engine if you actually use a blender pump. And I think we need, and I was wondering if the Next Gen Energy Board has thought about an education component and working towards that, because just these, you know, the 10%, those kind of mixes are just not optimal. And what the general public thinks is that, okay, you know, ethanol gets worse mileage. Well, that's not necessarily true if you use a blender pump, and it's not necessarily true. There's been a lot of research done. I don't know if members are even aware of that. If you convert a gas vehicle to run ethanol and you have a switch, so you're running dual computer programs, you can actually get a much higher mile per gallon running a different computer program for that ethanol than you can in a flex fuel vehicle, because the flex fuel computer program cannot differentiate between those two fuels efficiently enough to get high, you know, mile per gallon, even though the energy value is less on that biofuel. So are we looking at any whether it's education, whether it's more blender pumps, whether it's, you know, figuring out other research in terms of turning that ethanol or the biofuel, the diesel as well. When you're talking biofuel, you're typically not as efficient in general as, you know, the carbon-based fuel. And so I do know that a lot of people can be as efficient in terms of running different programs for that. Is NextGen Energy involved in any of that?
Madam Chair and Senator Jungbauer, I'll try to address each of these issues. First, to the corn ethanol issue, point taken. We do have, you may know about the project in Luverne that was partnered recently with a company called Gevo out of Colorado, one of the top five hottest biofuels companies named by Biofuels Digest this year. They are looking at producing isobutanol there by 2012. Which is a very next-gen effort. I would say for corn ethanol in general, you know, none of these next-gen projects are looking at that. However, they're building on what's there, and I don't think they could do that without having that building, that bridge. Blender pumps, I certainly think that's something that the board can look at. They can choose their topics, and I think it would be useful to visit a blender pump and have the American Lung Association, which really tracks blender pumps, come and provide an update. And I should be clear, we have 69 blender pumps that are at E85 stations, but in the state as a whole, we have 170. And then as far as energy efficiency, you know, some people think they get better mileage or find sort of that sweet spot at, say, E30, but that's kind of the beauty of a blender pump, is you get to choose, and you get to decide what you think is most efficient, and it might be what you think is most efficient that day because of the price of gas versus price of ethanol. And you may have heard, too, that certain companies have looked at creating an engine that's optimized for those types of blends, a company called Ricardo in particular. And then for trying to find ways to bring more blender pumps to the state. The USDA is about to roll out a program to provide more funding for blender pumps. They haven't specified the rules and sort of process for it. It's not clear if that money will then come through different state agencies or organizations, or if it'll be a direct application to USDA, but Secretary Vilsack has made a priority of getting more blender pumps out throughout the nation.
Ms. Connelly, does Minnesota have one of the highest amount of blender pumps, and how does a blender pump work?
Madam Chair, I will have to get back to you on the whether we have the highest number of blender pumps. I will contact our American Lung Association expert. I think so, but we'll get back to you on that for sure.
We have the highest E85 stations,
right.
I know. Largest number of those, but.
And the way it works, I think it's really neat. So an E85 pump could have a tank with E85 and a tank with gasoline, but a blender pump would have a tank with ethanol and a tank with gasoline, and then when you push the pump, it calculates how much you need to get E30 or something like that. So that's the really layman's terms for it, but.
Senator Magnus, would you like to say something about the isobutanol plant that's
Madam Chair, I was overwhelmed by the last testimony because I took organic chemistry in college and I got a D in it. The only reason I did because the teacher felt sorry for me.
Does that happen a lot, Senator Magnus?
Anyway, we on TV, so I can say that. Well,
there will be a test afterwards.
I'm a state senator, and I'll just think of that. but anyway, we've got an exciting time here, and it's important to remember, even though ethanol's been around a while and biodiesel not quite as long, these industries are still in their infancy worldwide, and there's a lot of efforts going on internationally and a lot of in a lot of biofuel efforts have been ramped up significantly in the past few years because of some of the events. Certainly, the turmoil in the Mideast ought to have everyone's attention.
Yes.
Since we're relying on very unstable areas of the world to supply a lot of our fuel needs, energy needs. And if you look at the map, this doesn't show it as well as a bigger map would of the nation, but not only does Minnesota raise a lot of corn, and Senator Jungbauer, we raise a lot of corn. We're the fourth largest producing state in the United States. But if you look at the map, the areas that are successful, probably the most successful in ethanol, is the western side here, because the farther away you get from the river, is the cheapest export programs we have, and that's where you have the highest priced corn. And so when you get out in the other areas and you have the transportation cost, not only do you have a lower price for the corn, but we are the storage area for much of the United States, because we are the end of the pipeline for rail and for water movement of agricultural products like corn. So that's why you'll see large livestock industries in much of western Minnesota and southern Minnesota, and why you see the concentration of the biofuel plants in those areas. And also, and we don't get this brought out enough, when I see anti-ethanol articles, for example, anti-corn ethanol articles, for example, in the paper, I'll write responses to them, but they don't seem to want to print them. Because they really don't want the public to know that if you take a bushel of corn and use it for ethanol production, they want the public to think that that's all used up. They don't want the public to know about the byproducts, which are very valuable from the ethanol, from corn-based ethanol production in the wet milling plants especially, because it does not use all of the corn up. In so-called the food dispute, you use a lot of this corn byproduct, the dried distillers grains, wet corn gluten meal, for livestock feeds. Most of it is for cattle, but we're using more and more of it every day on the pork industry, not as much in the poultry industry, but it's a valuable livestock feed. Our exports of dried distillers grains are going up. You'll hear these two arguments. Corn is a food. We're using all the corn up in ethanol, which is not the case. Ethanol is corn ethanol production has a valuable byproducts. We also are increasingly exporting more dried distillers grains. We have been a traditional market has been Europe, but increasingly we're seeing a market greatly expand to China,
Taiwan,
because they're looking at this. If you're looking at livestock feeds, the dried distillers grain is a higher protein source of foodstuff or feedstuffs for the livestock industry. So it only makes sense for a country like China, who has great protein needs for their livestock industries, to import a protein source like soybeans, soybean meal, or corn gluten, because they need the protein. And basically your ration, the protein part of the ration for poultry, for example, would be maybe 25% of the ration. The energy source, corn, wheat, barley, so on, would be about 75% of the ration. The Chinese know it makes more sense to import 25% of the ration than 75. They know what the freight costs are and everything else. And in pork, it's about 20%. 20% of protein source, 80% energy source. So they know this, and that's why you'll see great exports of China, or imports of China for soybeans, for example, because of the protein needs. Importing again 20 to 25% of the ration, and re-importing great increase in imports of dried distillers grains, because again they need a valuable protein source. So I guess the first myth I'd like to debunk is that when you use corn-based ethanol, you use up all of the corn and all the so-called food, and you don't. Mm-hmm. And there's other byproducts we can get into, but so that's a. It's an interesting industry. Again, we're still in infancy. We are getting better at squeezing more ethanol out per bushel of corn. We're getting more efficient in using water. Varieties we're using now are some of those are bred specifically for ethanol plants because of the attributes you need. Senator Junkbauer mentioned the starts and the sugars and all this sort of thing. So I think it's very wise for us to continue the next generation board, looking at two things basically on the energy side, supporting our current biofuel industry, because we again neglect how much we're getting, how much of our fuel source we are getting from that. That's not brought out by the papers either. Mm-hmm. They fail to mention that. So number one, support our current industries. Number two, work on the future of what we think the biofuels are going to be. And we spent a lot of time doing that. And Senator Rosen, you're on the committee, and Senator Anderson's been on it, too, for years. And we spent a lot of time thinking about this. And the plant in Luverne, as Ms. Connolly pointed out, is going to be the first commercial isobutanol plant in the world. So we're pretty proud of that, and we want to see how that goes. And I would like to have everybody come down and visit that this summer. I'm taking Senator Metzen out to look up some wind turbines. Yeah. Find any avian mortality around there or whatever.
Yeah. How do you get the, Madam Chair, can you get the Laverne from here?
We'll take my motorcycle, Will.
You know, members, I just want to point out, thank you, Senator Magnus, as the chair of the Ag Committee, and we do have a meeting on the next gen after this, actually. So we'll be talking about any further changes, and that will be a question that will be coming up, which you would suggest coming from the Department of Ag, if there has to be some changes to the board or an agenda that you would like to be moving, anything different than what we have looked at in the last 4 years. But, members, my Senate district has a tremendous amount of ethanol. There's 100 million gallon ethanol plants, over 100 million gallon ethanol plants in the state, and I have three in my Senate district. And I also have Lake Crystal and Winnebago. Winnebago was one of the first ones And they actually use a different type of heating energy source where they heat up the corn syrup, and that's their energy source. And then it produces an ash. They've marked that ash to be put back onto the field. And actually worked with Senator Anderson on putting two wind turbines to so you had a renewable servicing a biofuel. It's kind of a new project. It was very exciting. But I do want to ask you, and a very honest question, that we've just passed this environmental streamlining bill. And when we were trying to get some of these ethanol plants, get their permits and get them going, it was extremely difficult. Do you think this environmental streamlining bill is going to help our industry? What do you see some of the obstacles going forward with any of these projects that the NextGen board is going to fund or actually look at? What are some of the obstacles that you see?
Madam Chair and members, I think knowledge is a big one. You know, a lot of these projects are maybe working for the first time through a major permitting process. And so that's, you know, kind of where I highlighted the idea of ensuring that state agencies work diligently to make sure the process is understood well in advance, so they don't get caught up in thinking it's only going to take a month and $1,000 or something like that. I think that happens often. I do know that there have been efforts in many different ways to move this along already. You probably know that the Pollution Control Agency had sort of a pilot group last year, three individuals that were kind of restaffed from their usual positions to focus on ethanol, moving the ethanol industry forward through the permitting process, bringing plants together and saying, what do you need from us? We want to help you. In a couple of cases, ethanol plants took them up on voluntary audits, and in one case, the audit was very timely, and they went through the voluntary process with MPCA, and maybe a week later, the EPA showed up, and they passed with flying colors, and it was partly because of that. I don't know what that team will be, if it will go forward. It was, like I said, a pilot, and that's for the MPCA to decide, but I think that what they learned is that the ethanol plants also want to be on the same page and, you know, want to do it right, but they're so busy, they're so overwhelmed right now with economic issues that sometimes it's a misunderstanding. And so to just have more open communication, I think, is a huge help. And then another thing that's been going on at the state level is that a number of agencies have brought together key people that work on bioenergy to help companies in general, green companies in general, it's called the Green Enterprise Assistance Team, navigate through state regulations, find the right contacts within the state. Often the permitting process comes up, and it's been very helpful. It's sort of just getting off the ground, but consensus has been that it's successful thus far, and the group is continuing and will maybe expand. And so I think just that information sharing, both with industry and government and in government, is a great step forward.
Good. Anybody else?
Good stuff. Madam Chair, two thumbs up. Good work.
Good. Well, thank you, Senator Matson. I think so, too. And I look forward to working moving this forward. We're going to have to figure out who sits on the board. Senator Anderson has been on the board for a long time. Representative Magnus at that time, but now I would assume you would be on the board, and we'll move forward. So we appreciate your – excuse me? And Senator Sparks. Yeah, that would be nice, too. That would appreciate your comments on moving this board forward and making it successful and making sure that all the proper members are there working towards the same goal for this to make sure that we have some very viable projects moving forward. Senator Magnus.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would emphasize again what the presenter said about including, you know, not just the corn area or the crop growing area, but our forestry program.
That's right.
And, and Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, you were there when we suggested we add someone from the forest industry, because we think, you know, our future is bright. Again, we don't know what it is. I relate it to a superhighway of movement out there that we want to get to, but we have all these dirt paths in front of us, whether it's the technologies, they're all different, the the feedstocks, everything else. I think it's a mistake to pick a certain technology or a certain feedstock. I think it's, and we've worked hard at this on the Next Gen board to make sure that we were staying technology neutral and feedstock neutral, and let the cards fall where they may and support the areas that look at the resources we have here in our state, and they're vast and they're wonderful, and figure out how we can capture those resources to use to the best that we can to get us where we want to be. That superhighway out there.
Yeah, thank you. Senator Dibble.
I'm sure I think everyone should know I'm a biodiesel buddy.
Seriously.
I have the little certificate on my wall. I'm a biodiesel buddy.
That's cool. I don't think I even have one of those.
You get one of those. Madam Chair, you're not a biodiesel buddy?
Yeah, I should be.
They sort of missed the boat if they didn't find
you.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. Talk to the soybean farmers. Make sure that you're a biodiesel buddy.
That's right. Oh, very good. Any other questions from the committee? Comments?
I got it for nothing.
Senator Anderson.
Yes. Is this the end?
Yeah.
Committee?
Oh, another speech.
No, I swear.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I was
thank you.
People have already looked at me. I passed people in the Capitol in the last hour, and they said, you're still here? But this is my favorite committee, and so this is my last committee. So I just wanted to, I wouldn't miss it. It's so much fun. So thank you.
Well,
I just want to thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Senator.
It's a great committee.
It is a good committee, and you've had a lot of fun with it for a long time. And you've done some really good work. So I did want to say thank you to your help on many of these issues, some of your landmark issues that you've gotten through. So
Good job. Kudos. And good luck as you move forward. I really like what Senator Magnus said. You know, all those different roads moving forward. We're not sure which way we're going to go, but it's exciting.
Right.
There's lots of great opportunities. So.
Exactly. And I do just parting words and to Senator Magnus's comments, too, that these NextGen board and the relationship that we have with the federal government, and I know that Ms. Colleen Landkamer is in the audience. I just noticed her, the executive director for the USDA. So we need to make sure that we have all those relationships bridged and moving forward. So with that, the meeting is adjourned.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Oh,
so we look forward to seeing. This is not necessarily Senator Anderson's last Energy Committee meeting, though.
Yeah.
We're going to see
yeah.
her back here. Hopefully,
oh,
right there, yeah, underneath the bare light bulbs. No, we look forward to working with Senator Anderson in her new role.
Thank a lot you. Of pleasantries. That's good.
So, also, members, before I call this meeting over with, we are going to have our finance bill next Tuesday, and we're hoping to meet with each of you on Monday, just to run through it, and we have this room reserved till 6.
Ooh.
So we'll go through it, and we'll hopefully have, if there's any amendments, any discussion, but we need to get it out that day. So we'll present it. But you'll see it before that time.
So,
and hopefully meetings on Monday will bring you all in my office.
Madam Chair,
questions on that? Senator Dibble?
One at a time, or are you going to bring us all the DFLers in at one time, or to each?
Senator, that's sort of, I think, how it's kind of been done. No, it'd be too long. We'll bring the DFL and then the Republicans. And
Madam Chair, the better
Senator
question
Metzen?
If she's going to bring food for everybody.
She always has sweets.
Put some jelly beans.
Once again, I've lost control of this committee.
Take
a vote on that.
There will be treats, and we will see you on Monday, and then we'll vote on our finance bill on Tuesday, meeting adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.